This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
Sneaker Slump, one of the world's most recognizable brands, is cutting its workforce and shifting strategies. But investors don't seem all that pleased with Nike's decision.
Bridging the gap, the president touts apprenticeship programs, and businesses and workers applaud that idea.
Tech savvy. Some of the most popular 401k funds are loaded with technology stocks. Is yours one of them? Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Thursday, June 15th. Good evening, everyone. I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin, tonight in for Tyler Matheson.
And I'm Contessa Brewer in for Sue Herrera. Selling return to the technology sector, it was one of several factors that kept a lid on the stock market today. The Nasdaq, which has outperformed the broader market this year, finished lower for the fourth time in 5 days. Let's get right to the final numbers here. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 14 points. The Nasdaq was off 29. And the S&P 500 fell 5. Technology wasn't the only thing investors were keeping an eye on. Bob Pisani reports on a few other concerns hanging over the market.
Stocks were in the red with notable weakness in technology, which had been our market leader. However, tech leaders like Facebook, Amazon, Apple, and Microsoft cut their losses by more than half in the late afternoon. Two events are weighing on the markets today. First, overnight, The Washington Post reported that Robert Mueller, the special counsel who is overseeing the investigation into Russia's role in the 2016 election, was expanding the probe to determine whether President Trump attempted to obstruct justice. The market's last notable drop, remember this, was on May 17th, when the Dow plummeted on reports that former FBI Director James Comey had written a memo implying Trump asked him to stop the probe into Michael Flynn. The Dow dropped more than 300 points on that day. The lesson is that while the markets have learned to ignore many of President Trump's tweets, they are clearly sensitive to any suggestion that Trump may have engaged in behavior that could trigger a sustained investigation. Investors have allowed the Trump agenda to be pushed out, but they clearly do not believe that the Trump agenda is dead. Second, there is ongoing fallout from the Federal Reserve's aggressive position on interest rates. The Fed raised rates and indicated they still expected to raise rates one more time and start reducing its balance sheet. But inflation has been below the Fed's target recently, and other weak economic data like retail sales led many to believe that the Fed would reiterate that their more rate cuts coming were data dependent, a phrase they've used many times. But it didn't really happen. The Fed pushed ahead with rate cut plans with nary a nod to the recent weakness. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And Nike was the worst performing stock on the Dow index today. Investors were not enthusiastic about the company's decision to cut jobs and revamp its operations. Shares of the world's largest athletic apparel maker off more than 3% in today's session. Sarah Eisen takes a look at Nike's plan to be more nimble.
Nike is cutting jobs. The sportswear giant slashing 1,400 positions, 2% of its global workforce. It's all part of a new strategy to focus on selling faster and more to consumers directly. Also part of the plan, slimming down the number of product lines by 25% and zeroing in on 12 key cities where more than 80% of sales growth is set to come from, including New York, London, Shanghai, Beijing, and LA. The backstory to all of this, Nike's growth has slowed down lately. It's also getting crushed by a resurgent Adidas, whose retro sneakers and Kanye West's Yeezys have been a big hit in the United States, especially. Nike's also feeling some pain from the broader weakness in retail right now. Department stores are suffering, and Nike feels the impact of heavy promotions and slower traffic. That's why the company's strategy has been and continues to be on selling directly to the consumer. Instead of Foot Locker and Macy's, focusing on its own website, its digital presence, apps, and its stores. Clearly, consumers are changing habits, tastes, behavior, and style. And Nike wants to stay on top of all of it by being faster and closer to that core customer. But they will have to convince skeptical investors. The stock has fallen over the past year and continues to underperform the overall market. Wall Street will get more clues when it reports earnings in 2 weeks. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Sarah Eisen.
And housing is a key pillar of the economy. Today, we learned that the home building industry is not quite as optimistic about its business outlook as it had been. Diana Olick takes a look at what's behind the shift in sentiment.
You would think the nation's home builders would be on cloud nine given the high demand for housing, but a shortage of buildable land and labor, not to mention higher material costs, are bringing builders back to earth. A monthly index of builder sentiment dropped 2 points in June to 67, and May's reading was revised down by 1 point. Anything above 50 on the National Association of Home Builders Index is considered positive. But confidence has been falling after a big surge following the presidential election and the first executive order lifting some environmental restrictions. Of the index's three components, confidence in current sales conditions as well as sales expectations fell, and buyer traffic dropped into negative territory. This after sales of new homes in April dropped dramatically, likely due to high prices and a lack of starter homes for sale. And this as the supply of existing homes for sale dropped to another record low, down 11% compared to a year ago, according to Redfin. The average house sold in May went under contract in just 37 days, another new record. Redfin measured just a 2.7-month supply of homes for sale. The realtors consider 6 months to be a balanced market between buyers and sellers. Home builders claim they are starting to target that entry-level market, but they're still not hitting the price point that most young buyers can afford. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Diana Olick in Washington.
And manufacturing activity may be leveling off. A report from the Federal Reserve showing an unexpected decline in May factory output. It's the second drop in 3 months. The decline comes as manufacturers crank out fewer cars, computers, and semiconductors.
Well, the Trump administration wants to increase the number of manufacturing jobs and help workers who've been left behind by the current economic expansion. To do that, the president is expanding the federally funded apprenticeship program, widely used in a range of industries. Aditi Roy has more.
Christopher Paul is a machinist at Solar Turbines. It's a critical role in one of the world's leading manufacturers of industrial gas turbines. But Paul isn't a full-fledged employee. He's an apprentice.
I'm getting, you know, hands-on experience with the career that I'm learning to be a part of.
It's an idea that's catching on. Tech companies like Amazon and Salesforce are using apprentices. Now, even the White House has taken notice of the possible benefits of apprenticeships.
We're empowering these companies, these unions, industry groups, federal agencies to go out and create new apprenticeships for millions of our citizens.
President Trump just signed an executive order expanding the nation's apprenticeship programs, making them a key part of his labor policy. In a meeting with business leaders earlier this year, President Trump accepted a challenge from Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff to create 5 million apprenticeships in 5 years. And just last month, Labor Secretary Alexander Acosta visited a BMW manufacturing plant in Germany to observe the company's apprenticeship program in action. Under Solar Turbines' four-year program, apprentices get paid, trained, and mentored. By the end of the program, all of them get hired. Company executives say the 60-year-old program helps fill a critical need in a competitive marketplace.
This apprenticeship program, in the skill sets that it provides, really does a great job at helping us build a pipeline.
He's not the only one benefiting from apprenticeships.
I think apprenticeships are absolutely huge for the future.
Isaac Morehouse thinks apprenticeships are the key to bridging the skills gap. 3 years ago, he started Praxis, a startup that matches apprentices with companies.
It's a three-month professional boot camp where we're helping young people kind of get the skills and knowledge that they need to go and succeed in the workplace. And then we're actually placing them in a paid apprenticeship.
One company that works with Praxis is this startup called PandaDoc. It helps clients with electronic documents, and apprentices are critical to helping PandaDoc manage its web traffic.
We have a million people that come to our website every month. I'm much more likely to hire someone from an apprentice program that's hungry for that experience than someone that's just randomly job searching.
Olivia Van Warmer chose an apprenticeship over going to college. She believes this path gives her a higher return on investment.
you're really just throwing yourself into this new lifestyle, and I think that's huge. I think you learn so much more from that than being catered to in college or otherwise.
Employers may get a good return on investment, too. According to a recent Commerce Department study, the return for businesses is $1.50 for every dollar spent on apprenticeships. The analysis also found companies benefit from lower turnover and greater productivity. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, San Francisco.
There are some reports tonight that the president will tighten rules on Americans traveling to Cuba and restrict some business deals, rolling back some Obama-era policies. That's according to Reuters. President Trump will lay out his new Cuba policy in a speech tomorrow in Miami. CEO of Marriott is urging the White House to instead improve ties with the island nation.
Still ahead, hackers have a new target, the oil and gas industry. Attorneys general from across the country are investigating the makers of opioids. The bipartisan investigation is looking into alleged deceptive marketing practices by manufacturers of the prescription painkillers. Those states are issuing subpoenas for documents and testimony as part of the probe, but they won't yet name any of the companies being investigated.
The rising price of prescription medicine, one of healthcare's biggest points of contention, it was a major topic of discussion among some of the industry's most influential CEOs. Meg Terrell spoke with them at the Heartland Summit, an annual gathering in Minneapolis.
Since even before he took office, Donald Trump has been putting pressure on the drug industry.
Our drug industry has been disastrous. They're leaving left and right. They supply our drugs, but they don't make them here. They're getting away with murder.
Today, reports the president may be getting close to action.
One thing that we hear is on the table for an executive order is a directive by the Trump administration to move towards value-based contracting for pharmaceutical purchasing. I think that is a good, positive, constructive outcome for the industry and for patients.
The news came as healthcare executives and investors met in Minneapolis for the Piper Jaffray Heartland Summit, where discussions ranged from drug pricing.
One issue we're talking a lot about is the difference between list prices of medications, which get widely reported, and what actually net prices are, and how consumers, individual consumers in high deductible plans in particular, are paying the list price, and why should they be paying that?
To health reform.
It's possible without the right kinds of changes with respect to funding levels and other regulations associated with the Affordable Care Act that we may have to exit certain markets because those markets are not sustainable.
Trump's plans for a potential executive order aren't yet clear, but Allergan CEO Brent Saunders says they could be a positive for the drug industry by focusing not on pricing, but transparency within the system.
We pay those rebates to lower the cost of drugs. That's why the industry pays them.
Yeah.
And so having them more directly lower the cost of drugs, I think, is a good thing. And ultimately will lead to a more clear and transparent system.
Such an executive order could be a boon to pharmaceutical stocks, experts said, as an alternative to measures like direct government negotiation over drug pricing.
Still, uncertainty in healthcare abounds. Health insurer Anthem, for example, just made the decision to withdraw from insurance marketplaces in Ohio.
Certain decisions have not been made to further strengthen or stabilize that marketplace. Mm-hmm. Net, we've come to a sort of a fork in the road in terms of our inability to serve our communities.
Observers hope for more clarity in the coming weeks as Republicans in the Senate hammer out their version of health reform. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Meg Terrell in Minneapolis.
A court has ordered another environmental review of the Dakota Access Pipeline. The judge ruled that federal officials largely complied with environmental law, but did not adequately consider all of the issues. That ruling is considered a win for environmentalists. The oil industry says it's not concerned about any long-term disruption to the pipeline, which began moving oil this month.
And oil prices are down this week on supply concerns, but that's not the only obstacle the industry is facing. Cybersecurity experts say that oil and gas infrastructure is a target of hackers and, if successful, could potentially shut down or disrupt production. Andrea Day has our story.
An industry on alert.
Boards are concerned because
the attacks do affect their reputation. So ultimately, it affects shareholder value.
The biggest risk? Experts say trade secrets, like drilling techniques and bids for locations.
The core advantage that oil and gas companies have over their competitors.
How much is this data worth?
The data is worth billions of dollars.
Adnan Amjad and Eddie Habibi work directly with oil and gas companies to help secure data from cyber attacks.
Is it more exposed now?
Oh, absolutely.
He says that's because the same technology that gives workers remote access to well sites and pipelines can also open the door for hackers around the world.
Nation-state actors have gotten access to this technology without necessarily investing the billions.
How much of this is actually reported?
Most of it is not.
Unless personal information like social security numbers are breached, oil and gas companies are not required to report attacks.
Most oil and gas companies do not like to acknowledge the fact that they've lost intellectual property where they've invested billions of dollars.
The Department of Homeland Security responded to 59 cybersecurity incidents in the energy sector last year. That's up 28% from the year before. But experts say that's just a small share of what's really happening.
Most oil and gas companies have been subject to an attack. It takes about 200 days for an enterprise to determine that they've been breached. And by the time you determine you've been hacked, the person who's been taking the information is long gone.
The trade groups that represent the industry turned down a request for interviews. But Homeland Security says it's very aware of the situation and working closely with the industry. Quote, while the majority of the nation's critical infrastructure is owned and operated by the private sector, we've worked to build a strong partnership with owners and operators. And information sharing is a key part of this work.
And experts say as more companies connect online, things could get worse. A recent study released by Siemens and the Panamon Institute says that 68% of oil and gas cybersecurity workers believe their organization has experienced at least one cyber attack. I'm Andrea Day for Nightly Business Report.
Kroger cut its profit outlook for the year, and that's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The nation's largest supermarket operator cited intensifying competition and falling prices, cutting into profits, as reasons for the warning.
In the quarter, we had about 20 basis points of deflation, excluding fuel. That was a little bit less deflation than the prior year and the prior quarter, but keep in mind, that's deflation on top of deflation.
As for its latest results, the company did post better than expected sales and earnings that matched analyst estimates. Shares, though, were hammered, losing 19% to $24.56. Sales at Bob Evans fell short of estimates, even as the food distributor said customers spent more on lower-priced, higher-margin products. Despite the miss, the company did manage to report earnings that beat street expectations. Bob Evans also reiterated its sales guidance for fiscal 2018. Shares were off 4%. To $68.99. And steelmaker Nucor said it expects earnings to fall and miss expectations this quarter. It blamed weaker demand from increased competition. Nucor shares fell more than 7.5% on the news to $54.60.
Late yesterday, drug maker Mylan said the Food and Drug Administration requested more information regarding the company's generic version of Teva Pharmaceuticals' multiple sclerosis treatment. Mylan is expecting a decision on its application for the drug this month, and the news rattled investors concerned about a possible delay. Mylan shares were down more than 2% to $36.98. The news sent shares of Teva initially higher today, but they too finished down, albeit fractionally, to $30.43. And a regulatory filing revealed that the Department of Justice recently launched a civil and criminal investigation into Booz Allen Hamilton's cost accounting and indirect cost charging practices with the U.S. government. The accounting firm says it hasn't uncovered any deficiencies through its auditing, but it is cooperating with the investigation. Following that news, shares of Booz Allen Hamilton initially plunged in after-hours trading and ended the regular session down marginally to $39.33.
The most popular 401k funds are crowded with some of the most popular and right now most volatile names in tech. The top three funds are loaded with tech names like Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Alphabet, the parent company of Google. And they're Vanguard, Wellington, Fidelity, Contra Fund, and the Fidelity Growth Company. What does it mean for you? K Ken Mahoney, CEO of Mahoney Asset Management, joins us now to discuss this. Ken, good to see you. Let's put this in perspective. Over the year, tech is up about 18%, but we have completed earlier this week the biggest two-day slide in tech of the year. How concerned should people be about how much they're invested in tech in their 401ks?
I think they should be concerned. Look, the FANG stocks, you know, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix, Google, been very kind to shareholders. Most consumers, we use these services every day. So it feels kind of crowded. It seems like everybody's in these leadership names because the leadership, quite frankly, is pretty narrow, right? So what we really want to do is start looking at these portfolios and really start, like, diversifying. Look what's happened in the last few days. Like I said, last 2 days, even last Friday, when at one point the NASDAQ was down 172 points. There seems to be a rotation. So most investors may stay into this party too long. So they may want to also rotate, much like the money managers rotating, into some other investments that gives better diversification.
Ken, but these are mutual funds. And it's worth noting that there are lots of other stocks, when you think about something like the Fidelity 500 Index, that are included here. So how should you think about it in that context?
So in that context, you know, a lot of investors and 401k investors, you know, have these different funds and different choices. And most people kind of, you know, they go through and click to see the best five-year return and just click, 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 click. And not looking at what's inside those portfolios. Again, the S&P 500 is well diversified. I get that. But there's a lot of other funds that are really concentrated in these FANG-like stocks or technology-like stocks because that's where the action is. And money managers kind of drift over there too. So it's kind of like money managers drift to where the hot spot is and investors also kind of drift over also where performance is. So I think for, you know, I'm sorry.
So, well, Ken, I'm just wondering then, are there some other stocks, other tech stocks that are getting overlooked here because there's so much focus on the FANG stocks? When you look at the 74% of the tech sector stocks are outperforming in the marketplace now. Where should people be looking if they want to invest in tech but without some of the volatility?
Yeah, you know, investors can look at some P.E. ratios, again, try to simplify. I mean, those are not spending too much for it. But the old technology, Microsoft, Intel, they still have great earnings. Yes, you know, in a strong market, you may not get the full upside. But in a down market, investors are going to cling to those that have better P.E. ratios or, you know, better ratios as far as value is concerned.
All right. And what's your best advice about how much we should spend, how much should be allotted to tech in our 401k?
Probably maybe 20-25%. You know, any more than that, you're really overly concentrated, overly weighting that area. Because right now, again, it's high volatility, as you mentioned. If the market goes higher, you're gonna get the biggest bang for your buck. But if we do correct, and you know, there's some feeling here, you may have a little correction here with everything that's going on. You know, these are the names that are gonna come down first.
Ken Mahoney with Mahoney Asset Management. Ken, thanks.
Okay. Thanks. When we come back, turning a stadium into a high-tech playground.
I'm Julia Boorstin at the StubHub Center here in Southern California, where they're making improvements ahead of the fall football season. We'll give you a look at the most cutting-edge technology being deployed at live event venues like this one. That's coming up on Nightly Business Report.
Facebook is ramping up its use of artificial intelligence to combat terrorist content on its site. In a blog post today, the company said it will use things like image matching and language tools quickly to identify and then take down questionable posts. Facebook and other social media sites have faced mounting pressure to do more to remove extremist content.
And Amazon is reportedly interested in buying corporate chat room platform Slack. Now, Bloomberg reports that the startup could be worth at least $9 billion. Giving it the potential to be Amazon's largest purchase yet. Slack would bolster Amazon's enterprise services business. The report also added, though, that the discussions about a possible deal may not continue.
With so many options for home entertainment, people may not be as eager to leave their living rooms and attend an event. That's why some stadiums are turning to all kinds of technology to make the trip and the high cost of tickets worthwhile. Julia Boorstin is in Carson, California.
Stadiums around the country are embracing a range of new high-tech tools. The new Sacramento Kings Golden One Center is taking it to the next level. It's got roving security robots. It uses big data analysis to maximize ticketing and streamline traffic. Plus, it has an app that puts control in consumers' hands.
Just as you have a remote control that controls your TV, the phone becomes your remote control. So now everything can be done through that remote, whether it's ordering food, it's connecting with friends, adjusting the temperature. Even if your kid drops a hot dog, we'll get you a new hot dog before your kid starts crying.
The Golden One Center is leading a nationwide trend. Cloud startups Venue Next and Built.io work with arenas and stadiums to build mobile apps with new tools to control every part of the in-stadium experience.
Here at the StubHub Center, they've installed a new Jumbotron and these state-of-the-art LED ribbon boards, readying for the new Los Angeles NFL team, the Chargers, to start playing here in the fall. They're also ramping up security as venues across the country look for new ways to make sure that their visitors are safe.
Beyond airport-like metal detectors and bag checks, venues are starting to tie tickets to mobile devices or even fingerprints and iris scans to make it easier to check attendees against security watch lists.
Part of it is the fan experience, right? We really don't want this to look like an occupying army. We don't want it to look like a prison. We want it to be a joyful experience for somebody who can come and relax and come in and be entertained.
And for those who can't make it to an event, NextVR live streams events to virtual reality headsets in partnership with Live Nation for concerts and the NBA for games. I watched the NBA Finals from right behind the net.
With VR, anybody can attend a game anywhere in the world. I mean, I think there are over 300 million NBA fans in China, which most of those will never be able to attend a game. So this gives incredible reach for the live experience in the markets where it otherwise wouldn't have it.
As for whether live-streamed VR could threaten ticket sales, NextVR CEO Cole says it might actually drive interest if a fan was wowed by a virtual view of a concert or game.
For Nightly Business Report, I'm Julia Borstin in Carson, California.
That's just incredible that you could have such reach to so many fans around the world.
You ever going to go to a game again?
Why would you? That's Nightly Business Report for tonight. I'm Contessa Brewer. Thank you for watching.
I'm Andrew Ross Sorkin. Have a great evening, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow.